a technical foul is going to be charged to Kyle Lowry.
Kyle Lowry getting involved with the officials right now. He's just got to let it go. Check out Rondo. Gets that ball quickly and very good at a little bit of a foul right there. And that's what Kyle Lowry was complaining about.
But someone needs to. Kyle teed up talking to veteran official Scott Wall, and he's gone. And that's why somebody needed to go over there. Kyle Lowry just got thrown out of the game.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's, weekly Raptors and NBA podcast.
Sometimes more than weekly.
Sometimes when we miss news, when news breaks moments after we wrap up taping, this becomes a twice a week kind of deal. But this week, this weekly. Is it, so enjoy it.
Don't bug me over Christmas holidays. And I got to get out of here. Every year I tell myself I will not end up in a mall the week of Christmas buying last minute gifts.
Is that where you're going after this?
Guess what I'm doing after this.
Going to Eaton Center?
Going to the Eaton Center. I'm going to crush down. Now, have you ever received or given a Christmas gift, or how does that work for you?
I got the greatest Christmas gift this year. What do you mean, how does that work for me?
Well, you're Jewish, so I don't know if it's something celebrate both?
The concept of gifts is completely lost on my peoples.
Well, no, I know that Hanukkah you get a gift every day, or some people just get one big gift. But like I asked you Christmas gift. I'm saying, do you ever buy a Christmas gift for someone? Or
yeah. I did Christmas this year.
You did Christmas?
Or I'm doing Christmas.
So like your family's just like, you know what? We're taking Christmas.
Well, my stepdad celebrates Christmas. So we like to get him involved.
Well, there we go.
Also, you know,
that's pretty good, actually.
One year, my grandmother, I think it was, spent $200 at Home Depot and got a Christmas tree. Or whatever the deal was.
Yeah.
So that year we celebrated Christmas. We had the tree and everything.
I like how you just tried to paint me almost like as a bigot right away. You're just like right off the top. You were like, oh, is that how it is? Our people versus your people.
No, but this year I got the greatest gift from my sister, which is, do you ever watch the show Nathan For You?
I love Nathan For You. Have you seen the new season?
I've seen all of it.
It's excellent. I'm so glad we can bond over Nathan For You.
I got The Movement, the book.
Oh, so good. But he wrote, he like made a book called The Movement.
Remember in the episode, Nathan, if you haven't seen Nathan For You, you're listening
to this.
Oh, they
actually made a book for that thing?
They made a book. They put on Amazon without mentioning.
Oh, right. The screenwriter, the ghostwriter got, of course.
They didn't mention, the backstory is super quick here. Nathan For You, it's a show where it's like not a prank show, but he goes out and kind of his goal is to
help small businesses.
Help small businesses.
With outlandish ideas.
Exactly. So one of them was to help a moving company cut costs on labor by convincing people that there was this new workout trend called The Movement, which is all based on, you know, lifting boxes and working out without ever having to go to the gym. So anyways, it's all fake. But then they put out a real book called The Movement. It doesn't mention Nathan For You once. It just has like the
please,
fake
when you
guy.
Finish that book, let me read it.
And it went on Amazon and it became an Amazon bestseller. And I have the book. I'll lend it to you.
Oh, that's so good. I can't wait to read it.
Okay,
oh, that's
back
so good.
To today,
this
back
is a basketball
to
podcast.
Show. We got a lot of stuff for you. I spoke to Samaki Walker couple days ago, and we are going to play that interview later on today. Really interesting dude. You know him from the Lakers, probably. He played on the Spurs in their early championship runs with Duncan and Robinson.
I think Lakers is probably where
those Shaq Kobe Lakers. He was like the backup, sometimes starting small forward. But he also is the only NBA player to have played pro ball in Syria. And so we talked about that experience and all the guys of his generation who he played with, all the guys who we grew up watching. So that was a cool conversation. Plus, there's plenty of stuff to get to in Raptor land. There's news left, right, and center. You want to just get right to it?
Don't we every week?
We do, so let's do it right now.
Hey, this is Matt Bonner, the Red Rocket, and you're listening to Free Association.
Erotic. Welcome back to Free Association. We could play that song every week, I think.
I love this song. Michael McDonald.
Everybody's dancing. Everybody's dancing in here.
Wait, turn it back up. Turn it back up. That's the great part. What a G, that Michael McDonald.
Oh, so good. Let's just do a podcast on Nathan For You and Michael McDonald. Let's just do that.
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay.
Contractually, I think we got to talk about the Raptors. So let's do it. You know how we like to start off our opening block with the big question? This week's big question, based off his Player of the Week honor and his crazy strong play as of late, where does or where should re-signing DeMar DeRozan land on the Raptors' priority list? Now, I know we're looking ahead, but it seems that, you know, one of the big elephants in the room when it comes to the Raptors this season, you know, we love to talk about the depth on the bench, the need for scoring, the need for perimeter scoring, how these guys are faring without two starters in the lineup, etc.
Right, there was a lot of upheaval in the offseason. It's caused a lot of change.
Exactly. But looming over all of this is the biggest potential change out there, which is that DeMar DeRozan is a free agent this summer, and the Raptors are going to have to make a big decision on whether or not they want to bring this guy back. We know if they do want to bring him back, it's going to take a max contract, something in the $24 million a year for 5+ years territory. We also know if the Raptors don't do it, another team will.
The Lakers.
Any other team with that kind of money will sign DeMar DeRozan.
Not any other team.
Any team with the money and a need for a two guard is going to be looking at DeMar DeRozan. One of the reasons why this is our topic this week is because this week on Sportsnet.ca, you know, our Agent X series, JD?
Of course. I love it.
Agent X, an active NBA agent.
Great idea.
Dishes on the NBA. This week he's talking about DeMar DeRozan.
That's my piece though, one day. I'm going to expose Agent X. That's going to be my piece.
Yeah, expose Agent X. Watch my reaction. It won't end well.
Yeah.
But this week he talks about DeMar DeRozan and basically the perceptions of DeRozan around the NBA and outside of Toronto. And it's something we've talked about before because it's pretty interesting. Like, he's a guy who is a very, 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 very good NBA player, a star talent, an all-star level player who gets picked apart like crazy. Like all Toronto athletes do eventually. You know, I think every market's fans, you know, weigh the pros and cons of all their players. That's natural. But with DeRozan, it seems like it's a little, the good always seems to get overshadowed by the bad in terms of the discourse around the guy.
For one thing though.
Yeah.
They've never gotten out of the first round with him.
No.
And you're only as good as your best player, and he's been their best player for a few years.
And you can say he's their second best player. He's not their best player.
Lately, over the last 10 games, he's been
player. No, I'm talking like big picture.
Yeah, I know.
Big picture,
I'm just saying for people getting frustrated, you know, you're right. People do tend to gravitate to criticizing stars in their market, but it usually happens when there's no winning happening. And for the Toronto Raptors, there's been no winning since Vince Carter was here.
Right, but you know, when you look at the team when DeRozan was drafted, when you look at the team in his first few years, there's like, yes, the Lowry trade really helped turn things around. When they found that, when they stumbled upon depth in that Sacramento trade, that really helped. But don't fool yourself. Like, the growth of DeMar DeRozan is a big reason why this team went from the cellar to being a perennial playoff team. I don't know if they're a playoff contender, but they're a team that went from bottom of the league to the playoffs, and his growth is a big part of that. So when you look at whether or not they should re-sign him, a big part of that conversation is, you know, how much more does he have to grow?
Right.
Because the team's going to go along with him in that regard. Now,
I think there's a secondary question to him, though, which is kind of the most important part of the DeMar DeRozan question, is whether or not he's someone that you can win a championship with or someone that keeps you competitive.
Now, yeah, here's my problem with that whole is he a guy who's going to win a championship conversation? There's like six guys in the NBA who you can say can win you a championship. So if you don't have one of those six, then what the hell are you doing?
See, I think there's more than that.
Maybe 10. Like,
let me rephrase it then.
It's a short list, and a lot of them are on the same team.
But can DeMar DeRozan be one of the best two players on a championship winning
team? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
It's just a stupid hypothetical. Like, it depends on the other guys around him. But yeah, I think
sure. If LeBron James is the best player,
exactly,
then it's much
and
more
if
likely
Kevin Love is the third best player or whatever, like,
right?
So that was a bad example, but you know what I mean.
So let me just go through quickly with DeMar because over the last 10 games he's been pretty incredible, and the reason that we're bringing this up today is because he's been so good that you have to start evaluating things, whether or not, hey, is this the guy that you're getting, or is it something that you think would be a little bit less?
So this is gonna be cool. You have a bunch of really cool numbers on DeMar, and I want to hear those, and then I want to explain why I don't think you need numbers to explain or to answer this question. So what do you got?
Well, I just think the interesting thing to me right now is that, one, is he's he's playing a little bit above his weight. I think we can agree. Like right now in the last 10 games, he's fifth in NBA scoring, and that's with Steph, LeBron, KD, and James Harden.
See, I don't see DeMar right now as a guy who's playing out of his mind. I think this is a level where he can.
So you think he's one of the top five scorers in the NBA?
I think he, you know, especially when you see Lowry's scoring going down, I think he's a guy who can be a 25 point per game scorer, a 24 point per game scorer. Yeah.
So I think that he's a guy who's not going to average out as a 20. Like right now, he's almost at 26 and a half, or he's almost at 26 points per game. That's not somewhere I kind of see him. I view him a little bit more over a slightly over 20 point per game kind of career player as we go forward here. The one thing I love a lot about DeMar's game, I really do. I think that a lot of what you say is very accurate in the sense that he's so picked apart. I remember I was at the Raptors Knicks game earlier this season, and two guys behind me were just killing DeMar all game. Meanwhile, he's leading them in scoring, and the only reason they're in the game is because DeMar DeRozan is playing well. He doesn't turn the ball over. That's one thing I love about guards, is that he's very careful with the basketball. He doesn't turn it over. His ability to get to the free throw line is well documented. The things that scare me a little
his
bit is, when it,
his assists have gone his way assists up. Have gone his up. Rebounding is up.
And
it's all,
I've said this on this.
He has a jump shot. He never had that before.
I've said this on this pod many times, is that when DeMar DeRozan is acting as a facilitator, I mean, he's always going to be a scorer first, but when he puts more emphasis on the scoring or on the passing in his game and the facilitating, there's a noticeable uptick in Raptors wins when he's over four assists a game.
In the past, it wasn't really an option. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's gotten better every summer. You know, I've spent a lot of time with his trainer, Chris Farr, like the guy who privately trains him every summer. Also works with Damian Lillard and some other guys. And every summer they take different skills and say, what are we going to add to the arsenal this year?
Yeah.
And you can chart season by season exactly what they've added, and they've delivered.
Right. So again, DeMar DeRozan, very effective player from within 16 feet. 67% of his shots are coming from there this season, and he's combined 50% from there this year. That's pretty incredible. Like, there's not too many guys that you're going to find that are able to do that. And last year, he took 57% of his shots from within 16 feet. So you can tell that when he's saying, DeMar's been on record saying that he wants to be better with his shot selection. This is evidence that, like you said, he's getting better as a player. He's getting smarter as a player. He's recognizing his strengths more. We've seen an uptick in his free throws. Same kind of thing. He knows where his strong suit is. It's within 16 feet, and it's within getting to the line. The thing that scares me is that you're thinking about offering a guy a max contract that ultimately isn't a great distance shooter at a position where you need distance shooting, especially in the modern NBA. He's the only scorer in the top 15, where he resides right now, who shoots less than 30% from three other than LeBron. And he's the only one other than Blake Griffin and Anthony Davis who shoots less than four a game. He shoots under two.
It's not, but this, we talked about this, I think, 2 weeks ago. That's not part of his game, and don't expect it to suddenly become a part of his game.
But here's the thing. While DeMar DeRozan is a young guy, because what, he's 24 years old right now? He's 25 years old?
Yeah.
Sorry, he's 26 years old.
Yeah.
He's 26 years old. Data tends to show that shooting guards cap out when they turn 27. Not that they cap out, but that they reach their peak when they're 27 years old. After that, you start to lose a little bit athletically, especially once you hit 30. So if you're going to give DeMar DeRozan a 7-year contract,
I can think of like 100 counter examples to that.
There's not. Look at everybody. Like, every shooting guard basically has their best year at or before 27 years old. 27 is pretty much the top range for a score.
So you look at DeRozan as a guy who's going to decline.
Yeah, I just think that...
Like he's going to decline soon.
Not that he's going to decline drastically. I don't think that he's going to turn 28 and he's going to fall off of a cliff. But I think that there's going to be a point in his career where once he loses a step, his regression is going to be harder than it is for someone like Klay Thompson, who's still able to give you the threat of shooting, who's able to spread the floor. When DeMar DeRozan loses that athleticism that allows him to get that extra step on guys to the basket and fly to the basket and not score within 16 feet with an ease, you're in trouble.
But I get the, like, from your tone, I get the sense you think this is like impending.
But it is.
Why? Because your data says in a year he's going to lose his first step.
Like, but it's not that he'll lose it.
You look at DeRozan,
I'm not
saying
it's a year.
You say
but
his athleticism is going to wane that much in the next 3 years.
But that's what I'm saying, though. But you're not giving him a max deal for 3 years. If the Raptors could give him a max deal for 3 years, sign me up. I'm right there. I'm first in line.
I get
it's when you're offering DeMar DeRozan a 7-8 year contract that I'm starting to be like, What's it going to look like on the back end of that deal? What's it going to look like when he's 32 years old and he can't shoot from outside 16 feet?
May I pose a question? What is your alternative then?
Because that's the problem.
Basically, what I understand is you would rather the Raptors not re-sign DeRozan at this max contract. I'm in the camp that you have to. And if you don't, you're setting yourself back and you're starting over. Which, you know, fine. There could be an argument that that's the way to go. You know, I'd imagine it's one that you would make. But I'm clearly in the camp that this is a guy who you need to invest in. And I know you believe he's not worth the money, the risk, the extension. You'd rather see him walk and get nothing back.
I truly, of course not. I don't, that's not the ideal situation.
Given the two options. The third option, I guess, is trading him, but that's not
going to happen. Given the two options, based on, here's another thing I will say too. This year still really matters, this regular season and the way that the Raptors end up in the playoffs.
Great point. Yeah.
If the Raptors flame out in the first round again, I just really don't believe that there's any recourse that the Raptors can take where they say, you know what, we're going to hand DeMar DeRozan a max contract.
Right, and that's fair.
Like, it's just, how can you? You're going to have, again, most of his prime years already underneath him, and you're going to pay a guy going forward who, like I said, who I think will, maybe not drastically, but will be starting to be in decline. You're going to be paying him for work that's already done. And I agree with you that DeMar DeRozan has earned this deal. If someone's willing to give it to him, all the power to him. I don't want to see the Raptors lose him for nothing, but they're also not in a position where they can trade him right now. They're one of the best five teams in the Eastern Conference right now. I think that that's pretty clear.
Well, the trade thing's like, that's not going to happen.
That's what I mean. It's not going to happen. But that's what I mean. It's not going to happen. So, no, it's not ideal that you lose DeMar for nothing. But I think that ultimately, if the Raptors don't end up in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, he's gone.
So what that means is if they don't go to the Eastern Conference Finals, you're blowing it up and starting from scratch.
But I don't necessarily believe it's blowing it up.
No.
You still have Jonas Valanciunas.
I don't care.
Have another year of Kyle Lowry.
You're
going to have two first-round picks. Who's to say that one of those picks doesn't end up in the top 10
because
shooting guard?
Because rookies, sophomores, don't play major roles on winning teams. They just don't.
But we watched Anthony Davis disprove that last season.
So the Raptors are going to get Anthony Davis in the draft?
No, I'm just saying that you can find guys that help you win at a young age. Maybe you don't win year, but I don't think you're blowing it up.
If you go to the draft for a solution, you're committing yourself to at least 4 or 5 years before you're winning.
But why
again.
Don't you want to blow something up if you can't get out of the first round?
No, well, that's a fair conversation, but you wouldn't be keeping Valanciunas and Lowry and all these guys and taking the same team forward and just replacing DeMar. You can't do that.
I think that next year, if they lose DeMar,
I hate that I'm calling him DeMar and not DeRozan. It's always a pet peeve of mine.
You're right.
But I've been doing it the
Although
whole show.
It's so much better to say DeMar.
DeRozan.
I think that one thing doesn't necessarily equate to the other. I think that you can rebuild
DeMar
on the fly.
Versus DeRozan?
No, I think that if you lose DeMar, that doesn't mean that you're going to immediately lose Kyle Lowry or JV or DeMar. They're not going to get out of that DeMarre Carroll contract anytime soon. So there are core pieces here that you're going to keep. So I guess the only thing for me is that I don't understand why one thing necessarily 100% means that if DeMar goes, that it's a complete blow up instead of something on the fly. But that being said, if it is, if he does go, it's probably going to be because the Raptors didn't succeed again in the playoffs, and which means that you have two first round picks in this year's draft and two first round picks in next year's draft as well. So you're kind of in a prime position to be adding new pieces to that JV, that DeMarre Carroll, to Norman Powell.
Right. And that's a great point. And I'm okay with that because, you know, you're right that if, let's say, it is a first round flameout, which I hope it's not, but it's perfectly well could be, then yeah, then something's got to give and what you have going on right now isn't working. So then you look for change. And that means letting DeRozan go. That means seeing what's up with Kyle Lowry and building around guys like JV and Powell, even your draft picks. And like I said, kind of starting over.
I want to move on to another guy that but you have a story to tell first, but well, I want to.
I got to give my side of this DeRozan thing. Is what I got to do. But
sure.
Bring up your name.
All I was going to say was that the piece, the core piece,
minutes.
We're not sure whether or not he's going to be a part of it or what he's going to be.
Who?
We want to talk about him because he's had a nice couple stretch of games recently. He's Terrence Ross. We'll get to that, but
yeah,
I want to hear more.
No. We'll get to Ross, who I spoke to today. So we'll get to Ross. But what I want to say about DeMar is that the reason why I think he's worth giving that max money to is because when you look at what you're investing in, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you toss out all the numbers and the stats are great and they do tell a story, but there's another side of that story, and that is that character matters, you know, like the person matters. You're not investing in DeRozan's shooting stats. You partially are, but you're also investing in DeMar DeRozan, the guy. And, you know, like, I can safely say that I've had more access to DeMar DeRozan away from the court, away from basketball, than any other media person, just because of my work with the magazine and the work I've done with that. So I've been around and seen his circle, the people surrounding him. I've seen the conversations that they have with him. I've heard his kind of his conversations in the summer, what they're like, what basically his approach to the game. And it all leads to, this is a guy who wants to win. This is a guy who wants to get better. And this is a guy who's obsessive over those two things. So for me, that's a great quality in a guy who you're going to point to as a leader, who you're going to invest in as a leader. It's not some guy who's just super talented and coasting through it. And away from basketball, he has all these other interests that he wants to get involved with. You know, he's not James Harden or whatnot. This guy is solely focused on getting better, getting his team better, and he's super loyal to the Raptors. And these are all things that I think you reward. Now, I mentioned Agent X earlier, and one of the coolest stories, and this hasn't been told before, it will be on Sportsnet.ca as part of the next Agent X this week. But basically, Agent X tells this story. You know, when the Rudy Gay trade happened, you know, I mentioned, JD, about how they kind of lucked out with that Sacramento trade, right?
Yep.
They got a bench.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, everyone knows that.
It wasn't intended to be all of a sudden turn into a win.
Yeah, they didn't trade Rudy Gay so they can get Gravis Vasquez in as their backup point guard. It was meant to shed salary and to replace it with a bunch of expiring
expiring contracts?
Contracts. That's right. So that was done. But basically, it is a known thing within the organization that Tim Leiwicki kind of ordered the tank job that year. He wanted Andrew Wiggins. And he did
everything. Who didn't?
Exactly. Who didn't? And for good reason. Because can you imagine if the Raptors would have... could you imagine if the Raptors would have landed Wiggins? It would have been huge. But so Tim Leiwicki, his plan was to tank. He said, let's trade Rudy Gay. Let's trade all our assets. Let's bottom out this season and strike gold in the lottery. So they trade Rudy Gay. They go to Los Angeles. You remember that game against the Lakers? It was the first day after the trade. They won. They had like six guys or seven guys because the Sacramento players hadn't come yet. Amir Johnson had like a 20-20, I think.
I remember him having a big game.
Yeah, yeah. Monster game. Anyway, so they won that game. And it was like, basically, after that game, they fly back to Toronto. At 3:00 in the morning, DeMar DeRozan arranges a meeting with Masai Ujiri. And again, this is the story, but it's been confirmed by a couple people now. DeRozan goes back to Toronto, arranges a meeting with Masai Ujiri at 3 a.m. at the Air Canada Center, and he tells him, if your plan is to tank, you need to trade me right now. And that got around to the rest of the players on the team, and it basically just solidified this guy's character in that locker room and amongst that organization. This is a guy who is not willing to stick around and be part of a losing effort. He's here to win basketball games. So, that being said, is he a flawed player? Sure. Is he the kind of person who I would want to invest my money in? Hell yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing. This is my quick counter, and then we'll move on to some T-Ross. I've never debated whether or not DeMar DeRozan's a good guy or not. Or
it's
whether
not
he's the
guy.
Type of guy
it's
you want. A great not, guy, sure.
It's, no, it's a not great, good guy, bad guy, great guy, whatever.
Sure.
It's where his values lie, what he values.
Sure, but I think that as good where his values lie are probably still in line with... When you say he's a guy that wants to get better, he's a guy who wants to win. Don't you think that there's more guys in the NBA that want to get better and want to win than aren't? They're professional athletes.
I think it's... Okay, but here's that's... I think...
Like, ultimately, the bottom line is...
With all due respect, I think that's naive as hell. I really do.
I just think the ultimate...
I think there's a mass number of players out there who are thrilled to be playing basketball for a living, to be getting paid to do it, to be getting endorsements, to have this thing, this vehicle to let them travel around the world and experience all these super cool things. And the number of players who actually just want to win basketball games is way smaller than you think.
Sure. But ultimately, fans, what they want is guys who help them win basketball games and guys who help them win championships.
And I think DeRozan
ultimately,
can do that as well.
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to with DeMar is he a guy that can help you win a championship?
And it's a big question. It's going to be around this team for
certainly it's,
the rest of the season.
It's not going away, and it's going to ramp up. And I know
we'll
DeMar has said
it all next summer.
He doesn't want to talk about it, but people... Nope. It's going to start getting brought up the closer and closer we get to the trade deadline and more we know about this team. One thing we're learning a little bit more about this team is that Terrence Ross is a guy who seems to play a little bit better when he gets more minutes. Okay, here's a question I have for you. We always do the big question, but I have kind of the secondary big question for you.
The littler question.
Was the Damari Carroll injury a bit of a blessing in disguise.
What you clearly listened to Free Association. Our Damari Carroll injuries episode started with asking, is this the best thing that could have happened to T. Ross? And it turns out...
Yes.
Yeah, probably was.
So some of the numbers with T. Ross are almost a little bit staggering. It's
such a small sample size. I hate putting investment into these kind of numbers.
It is.
But bust it out.
No, but I was going to say, they're not staggering in the sense that, like, oh, I'm ready to say that he's a great player. He's a good player. Because honestly, it's been up and down with him. He's had a couple of nights where his shot's falling. Yeah. And then there have been nights where he gets absolutely nothing. Like, what game was it that he didn't even score in? There's been five of them. Spurs game where he didn't even notch a bucket. Like, I'm just saying that in this stretch since Carroll's been out, he's had a couple moments where... It was the Sixers. The Sixers game he didn't score in, which is unbelievable. I'm pretty sure I think I could get a bucket in the Sixers game. I'm just saying. All game long, you put me on the corner, just let me chuck them up there.
Yeah.
I'm getting one.
You'll get an open look.
So, we've been talking about DeMar the entire time, or DeRozan as we should call him now, but Ross, to me, he looks like a guy that's shooting the ball with a lot more confidence and he's looking for his shot a lot more, which is so important with him. And we talked about how he and Patrick Patterson, more than anybody else, kind of needed to step up when it comes to long-range shooting, because it's something the Raptors don't have a ton of.
Because they're the only two guys who can provide.
Exactly. And they're the two dudes off the bench that needed to do it.
Off the bench.
Yeah. So before the Carroll injury, Ross was shooting 30% from three. He's been 43% in the eight games that he had that he's been out. That's a pretty big lift. And you want to say smaller sample size, that because one, he played 15 games before the injury and only eight games since Carroll's been out. But he's actually shot only one less three since Carroll's been out. He shot 46. Now he shot 47 when Carroll was there. Huh. So he's taking a lot more shots and a lot more going in.
Well, and the coaches are asking him to take a lot more shots. Like it's his role. That's what his role is on this team. And he knows it.
It has to be. The only thing I'm still not crazy about with him is that, and you know what? I will give him credit before I say what I'm not crazy about, is that he looks more engaged on defense. You look at even that Kings game, and he's barking at guys on the defensive end. He's communicating with his teammates. He's not overhelping as much.
Well, look,
he's not fouling as much.
It's the kind of thing where once you start seeing your shots fall,
everything just starts.
Yeah, it wakes you up. It kind of makes you feel good about yourself again. He hit the most badass three I've ever seen in my life today at practice. Granted, this is wide open, nobody guarding him, but he had like Anthony Bennett.
Talking about practice.
I'm talking about practice. He had Anthony Bennett like yelling in his ear as he was shooting. And so he took the shot and then turned around as it was like in midair, like, you know, like the Nick Young, when Nick Young put his arms up.
I call that the Steph Curry, if anything.
Sure,
are you kidding me?
But the Nick Young one is the most memorable because the shot missed and it's just hilarious.
Right.
But so he did one of those, he just basically turned around. So he was like nose to nose with Bennett and just kind of said, what? And then the shot, you just heard the swish in the background.
That's the Steph Curry. The Nick Young would be the miss. The Steph Curry is the make that he looks at the bench and hits
it. Fair enough. He made it. It was really cool.
That's sweet, Terrence Ross. I'm glad you're making threes in practice, but most importantly...
No, he's terrorizing Anthony Bennett in practice.
Most importantly, I'm hoping that he makes threes in a game, which he's been doing a lot better lately. I'm still not crazy about his off-the-dribble mid-range game, and I really wish he would find... It's so jarring to me that a guy that's got his athleticism and his length just doesn't go to the basket.
Right.
It's dumbfounding to me, but that's something he needs to improve in his game, because there are going to be nights that your shot's not dropping and that you do need to get to the line. And it's the one big gap in his game. I'm still not sold. I mean, like we said, it's a super small sample size. There's been more to discourage you about Terrence Ross still this season than there has been good. But at least there's a glimmer of hope that this guy's not going to have a train wreck of a season.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's the big takeaway for me as well. I mean, with Ross, I think he's going to be up and down maybe for the rest of his career. You know, he just might be one of those players. As guys who are shooters tend to be, you know, spot shooters, volume shooters. But yeah, definitely it's good to see that he's going to have his good nights as well.
Same thing.
Because for a while it was looking like something, you know, we had lost Terrence Ross.
I know. And where do you land on Patterson? He had a good game against the Kings. He had his season high.
Another guy who games like that where shots start falling in bunches, it helps your vibe.
Only his second game over 10 points season.
I heard that too, and that was staggering.
Yeah. Last year, 37% from three. This year, 30%. He's been 25% in December.
And it's part of why, like, I'm not too worried about where the Raps are at, because I know there's a lot of flaws to expose that, but, like, they're missing two huge starters. They're integral kind of bench pieces have been like
forced into bigger minutes
and also kind of garbage overall. And they're still playing decent basketball.
Yeah.
The inconsistency is still a concern, but I think there's just so much going against them right now that they're staying afloat. And that's more than you could have expected.
Yeah. So just quickly on Patterson,
and Lowry's cooled off too, you know,
Lowry's cooled off. Michael Grange wrote a great piece on it on Sportsnet.ca
right now.
Pointed out some of Lowry's numbers over the last little bit and how it kind of mirrors last season in terms of when he started to decline. So hopefully history's not repeating itself when it comes to Lowry.
And a big part of that is going to be because of the minutes that he has to log.
He and DeMar still, we've mentioned it many times on this podcast, both top 10 in minutes guys.
DeMar's a guy who, it's going to be taxing on anybody. DeRozan can handle it a hell of a lot better than Lowry can just because of their physical makeup, positions they play.
Their age,
the positions they put themselves in on the court. Like for Lowry to be taking those falls all the time is going to add up. DeRozan.
Lowry took a dive in that Kings game after a loose ball, and I was just why are you doing that?
Well, that's what he does.
I know.
But if you look at DeRozan like in his rookie season versus now, like he's
massive.
Jacked.
He's
built himself padding on for the purpose of driving and getting hit.
Yeah. Whereas Lowry's
shedding weight, which makes those falls that much worse or harder on his body.
So right now, no concern from you or moderate concern or high-level concern in the way that Lowry and Joseph have played over the last couple of games?
Just based on the last couple of games? Yeah, it's moderate concern. Lowry...
Is there anything to the
Lowry's not
going to
be the MVP candidate he was earlier in the season, but I don't think you could have realistically expected that to be sustainable over the course
of the
season. The
decline certainly can't be like last year, though. There has to be some type of middle ground.
You know, like this, but listen, this is the frustrating thing about having to do a weekly podcast is that basketball, it's peaks and valleys.
Of course. I think more of the reason that this comes up is because of the sample that happened last season in terms of where they pulled it up. Hold on. I pulled up the Grange article right here. So over his last six games, Lowry's averaging 17 points and 4 assists on 33% shooting, 25% from deep. In contrast, he was averaging 22 and 6 in his first 23 games on 43% shooting and 42% from deep. I don't think he's a 42% three-point shooter. So that number was obviously going to come down, but dear God, he can't be a 25% shooter, not on this team.
Disagree. No, of course he can't. But I think the number there that worries me the most is the 4 assists a game.
Right.
You know, especially if your shots aren't falling and you're a point guard.
Yeah.
That's a great opportunity to really, put on a Rondo night. Become a facilitator for a whole half, just concentrate on getting other guys in good positions.
In his defense, he's doing a lot of his pick and roll with Bismack Biyombo right now.
You know That's a great point.
Your assists are going to fall off a little bit when you've got one of the most stone-handed players in the NBA catching lob passes.
That'll be really interesting. I know the numbers have to be out there. I'd be interested to see his assist numbers with JV on the floor versus not.
Yeah, those numbers are there, no doubt about it. Okay, last thing before we move on, because this has been a quick block. And I'll just ask you the flat question. Is Anthony Bennett going to be in the NBA next year? He has to go down to the D League. Good move by him. He needs the conditioning. I'm surprised he didn't do it sooner, to be honest with you. He's the first overall pick ever to go to the D League, which someone tweeted, he's a trailblazer. And I died because it's just hilarious. But is he in the NBA next year?
He's the first overall pick ever to play in the D League?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hasheem Thabeet.
He
was second overall.
Second overall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. And it's not like on a conditioning stint.
Well, what I like about
Brandon Jennings is in the D League right now because he's conditioning his body.
He was also like the ninth pick, I think.
I know. I'm just saying that there's never been a case of a guy doing that. But is he going to be in the NBA next year?
You know, like you brought it up with Norman Powell in terms of are you going to ask to go down to the D League? And I do like that he asked to go down
so he
can play and maybe showcase what he can do and get conditioned. Will he be in the NBA next year? Yeah, because it will be really, really...
Someone will still take a flyer on him to be like, maybe.
What if he spends a lot of time in the D League this season and plays well? Then someone's going to be like, you know what? We'll give it a chance. It would be unbelievable if he wasn't.
Speaking of guys who are great dudes, he's a good dude. He's always been very accommodating for whenever I've wanted an interview with him or some time off to the side. Very, very good dude. Very good for the national program. I think that he'll always have a spot there, but I'm starting to wonder if he's going to be in the NBA next year.
Yeah,
I'd say odds.
Super nice guy, but it goes back to the DeRozan thing. Yeah. Like, how bad do you want it, and how are you going to show it? I'm not saying that his drive isn't there. I'm not saying
it has been questioned.
I'm not saying he doesn't want it, but there's ways to show it.
The mental part of his game, too. And like I said, it does look like he's added a little bit of weight. He doesn't look like he was as in shape as he was to start last year.
When you're that far on the bench, and this was the Bruno problem last year, when you're that far down on the bench, you're not practicing either, at least in terms of like full court scrimmages and whatnot. So you might be getting your half court sets, you might be putting up your shots, but anyone knows this. You stop playing for a while, you're gonna go out of shape, and it's gonna take a while to get back into it.
I know that more than most, especially come January after I've been eating all the home cooked food and everything like that.
Okay, listen, we talked about the Samaki Walker thing at the beginning of the show, and let's do that right now. Let's take a little time out and come back. Let's talk to Samak, who we're going to have back on to talk raps as well.
He's following the team?
He's an NBA analyst now, yeah. Wow. We didn't really get to go into too much of this season, so I want to have him back. You'll hear, he's great.
Yeah.
So I want to have him back to talk about this season. We were talking about, it's a fun time in the NBA now because we talked like a couple years ago maybe about how the transition from one generation of stars to the next. Like we're now in the LeBron James, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis era. You know what I mean?
You know, it's sad. I feel like we're almost out of the LeBron James era.
Yeah, it's true. So we're in the Steph Curry era, however you want to put it. But when you look at the generation, the stars in the generation before, like Dirk Nowitzki, Dwayne Wade, Tim Duncan, these guys are still in it, still doing it. So it's a cool like crossover phase of the NBA right now. And Samaki Walker got to play with all those guys. So we're going to hear from that from him after this. Free Association. You can find on iTunes, sportsnet.ca.
And sportsnet.com.
Hi, it's DeMar DeRozan of Toronto Raptors, and you're listening to Free Association. You ran off and met, but I love you still. Lucy, please come back where you belong.
Lucy, please come back where you belong. All right, welcome back to Free Association. Our next guest was the 9th overall pick in a loaded 1996 draft. He's won titles with the Spurs and the Lakers. And he also enjoyed a career overseas where stops included Syria, where I believe he's the only NBAer to go and play pro ball over there. Nowadays, you can hear him on NBC Sports Radio. Thrilled to have Samaki Walker joining the show. What's going on, Samaki?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Everything is well. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm great. I'm excellent. I'm ready to talk some basketball. Like we were saying earlier, super interesting career you had, and I want to get to all of it. But I mentioned right off the top, the 96 draft, that'll go down as one of the all-time greats. I have to ask you, when you're, you'd go through the pre-draft stuff, maybe you're working out with the other guys or scrimmages or the photo shoots after the draft. Like, take me back to them. When you're looking around the room, and let me just throw some of the names out there for those who aren't aware. Iverson, Camby, Abdul-Rahim, Marbury, Ray Allen, Antoine Walker, Kobe Bryant, Peja Stojakovic, Jermaine O'Neal, Steve Nash, Derek Fisher, JYD, huge Raptors favorite here, Big Z, Zydrunas Ilgauskas. I mean, it's crazy impressive. So when you're looking around the room there, who did you look at and say, this guy's going to be the biggest star down the line?
Well, Allen Iverson, no question, no doubt. And obviously I recognized that in high school. The first time I laid eyes on the young man, he had put in a spectacular performance. Up until that time, I had never heard about him. And then all of a sudden, this kid comes out of nowhere and he put on a performance that definitely sealed the deal for me. And he lived up to the hype in college and as well as the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, and just a super unique kind of one-of-a-kind guy. Another name that obviously sticks out is Kobe going 13th. I mean, was he a sleeping giant or did you guys, had you played against him before that draft?
No, I hadn't. And honestly, it was a sleeping giant. As a kid out of high school, nobody expected a kid out of high school
especially then
to have that kind of an impact. Yeah, especially then. I mean, but the kind of impact and obviously who the player Kobe became, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you had a few great high school players that come in, but Kobe Bryant, in my opinion, was the best high school player probably to ever come in and reach this kind of success.
Mm-hmm. I guess Moses Malone is the only other kind of real candidate, maybe. LeBron James.
Yeah, there you go. LeBron James, I'm sorry. LeBron James, obviously, but
it's a conversation, though.
Kobe, in my opinion, is that there's Michael, then there's Kobe.
Right.
I mean, You could arguably say Kobe's the second best two guard to ever play the game.
And I mean, you got to see him firsthand more than almost anybody. I mean, you played with some crucial years on those Lakers teams with him. When you look at what's going on with Kobe now, the way his career is ending this season, at least, like, what do you see? What are your thoughts?
I see an aging player. Yeah. I see Father Time catching up, which inevitably catch up with all of us at some point in time. You know, it's time. I think we've all appreciated what Kobe has done, you know, for the game. Even myself as a fan of the game, I got a chance to watch this young man, you know, first class athlete, first class mind as it pertains to the art and science of basketball. And I don't say that about many people. You have a lot of great talents out there, but Kobe was a scientist when it came and how he approached the game. And for me, it taught me how to approach the game, and it opened up a whole nother world for me, having a chance and opportunity to play with him.
And his work ethic, like his practice regimen or whatnot, I mean, that's pretty legendary. I mean, what did you see from that?
You're talking about a guy who's, again, I'll go back to the art and science of the game, who approached the game from that perspective, who broke down and analyzed everything. And so, you know, going back to, well, analytics has always been in basketball, and Kobe was a guy who was very analytical in his approach and how he did things. And I've seen the guy come in the gym and for the first 10 minutes just roll the ball out and work on footwork. And I guess if there's one thing I could say I learned most from Kobe and watching him practice, and I tell this to my clients now, is that you have to bring your imagination. He is a product of incredible imagination meets preparation and determination. And it's amazing that I got a chance to see that, because now I'm trying to coach that, you know, to my young clients. And, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's prime basketball player development, right?
Prime basketball player development, yes.
Yeah, and so it's cool. I mean, you're obviously able to take your experiences and transfer to the next generation. I mean, but when you look back on that generation, you know, one thing that's changed a lot since then, you could say, is the draft day attire. And you know, your suit, man, that's gonna go down as one of the all times. It's the hat that puts it over the top. That was a bold move, and I respect that.
Hey, man, you know what? Honestly, it was last minute. Let me keep it real. It was last minute. I actually had the suit, you know, separately. I didn't get to have it at the same time. And by coincidence, next door there was a hat shop, and his hat was literally in the window, and it was sticking out. And my agent and myself, as we were walking by, we saw the hat.
He was speaking to
me. He looked at me. I looked at him. He looked at me. I looked at him. And the decision was made. It's final. It was a dare. It kind of went with the whole theme of me being from Louisville to Kentucky Derby. So
that's awesome. It was meant to be. Okay, I really want to talk about your experience in Syria, because that's just, I mean, like I said, one of a kind, truly. But you know, we're talking about kind of you playing with Kobe in some of his early days and whatnot. And I was just looking back at your the teams you play for, and there's a pretty interesting through line, which is that you've played with some of the, you know, mainstay superstars of this generation in their rookie years. So I just want to kind of go through some names of guys who you played with as a rookie, and maybe you can just talk to me about, you know, them then versus now. The first one, obviously, is Tim Duncan on the San Antonio Spurs.
Tim was a fantastic opportunity for me to learn from Tim Duncan, and I actually turned down money in Dallas, Dallas Mavericks, to go play behind Tim Duncan, and an opportunity to watch him play and David Robinson, and learned a lot, and which prepared me for my journey with the Lakers. And, you know, I look back on my career too and look at some of the guys I play with.
It's wild.
You know, Jason Kidd, Jamal Mashburn, right. Jim Jackson. This guy, Tim Duncan, is a product of, again, going at the preparation, you know, sort of like Kobe. It's not, you know, a surprise of why he's so successful, you know, in this era. He's that guy who's going to bring it every night, who is, his preparation, his approach to the game is on a level that has, in my opinion, is rivals Kobe's.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a quieter version, but he's a quiet assassin. And if you watch Tim Duncan, he is the ultimate team player. And my choice for the best power forward to ever play the game.
No arguments there. It's interesting you mentioned him as kind of a quiet guy, and that's you know, what everyone says. And he's got this reputation as, like, emotionless and, like, almost like a basketball robot. But there's another side of him. I've heard, like, other teammates speak about how he's, like, he's a genuinely funny dude, you know, away from basketball as well.
Bro, really funny. Oh, hilarious. I had a fortunate pleasure of being with him and some great guys, Malik Rose and Antonio Daniels, who were all great teammates. And we had a good, you know, good young crop of core guys there. And, you know, it was – that's typical – Popovich atmosphere,
right?
You know, hard work, but we're going to have fun. It was family, and it was probably one of the most genuine atmospheres I've ever experienced on any level in my basketball career. Probably one of the most balanced situations where there was a lot of, you know, the hierarchy. You had the David Robinson, you had the father figure of Popovich, you had, you know, the star and Tim Duncan. I mean, the team was so balanced. But then, with that being said, you had Eddie Johnson and those guys to balance it off.
Jared Jackson.
Oh my God. Oh man.
No one ever talks about it. Yeah.
Hey man, let me give JJ a shout out. Shout out to Jared Jackson, man. Because hey, I appreciate you breaking that up.
Yeah, no, he's been on the show before. He's I know him from when he coached out East. He is a funny dude. He's a good guy.
Hey, great guy. Probably one of the guys, honestly, that I spoke most with on the team because he was just that guy who would seek out the new guys. He was that kind of guy who would make you fit in. And that's what made the Spurs good, is that they had guys who would sort of mimic or radiate everything that Popovich wanted to represent for the San Antonio Spurs.
And it's crazy to think, like, we're 20 years later. It's kind of the same story with that team.
Same story, same cast of characters.
Right.
Popovich.
Ginobili. He was another guy.
Ginobili. Oh, yeah, Ginobili. I mean, but if you look at the management, you know, same cast of characters.
Right.
These guys have an idea of what they want in their system, and they go out and get those kind of guys in their system. And they're going to be successful. I mean, if you look at their success and what they've been able to do, it's unprecedented. They went from the Tim Duncan era to the Tony Parker era as the NBA transitioned into more of a outside point guard league, was successful in that era, now transitioning to Kawhi Leonard.
Crazy.
I mean, amazing. They never skipped a beat.
It's wild. Okay, another rookie who you played with, it would have been, I'd imagine, a different rookie experience than someone like Duncan, is on the Mavs, on your first team, Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk Nowitzki, yeah. I was his... you go on YouTube, there's a video of him crossing me over. So I think that's... No, it was an honor and a pleasure getting a chance to watch Dirk, because I got a chance to actually see him and his unique trainer that he had, you know, build
right,
a basketball player, man. Yeah, it was intriguing. It was interesting getting a chance to watch this Dirk Nowitzki, who came as a 7-footer, who couldn't walk. He was coordinated, but he was really soft and he wasn't really, you know, NBA coordinated yet. And to see this guy being built and to see Don Nelson orchestrate this whole thing and building Dirk Nowitzki, it was amazing. And I seen the evolution of Dirk and watched how he was coached and the hard man hours that he put in after practice. I was there with him a lot of those times, banging him, you know, using the physicality, getting him adjusted to the NBA game. And, I mean, look where he's at now, Hall of Famer.
I mean, could you have looked at him as a rookie, and it, even not just like basketball skills-wise, even maybe like between the ears, and thought, this is a guy who's going to be the alpha dog on a championship team?
No.
Yeah, it would have been tough.
Make no mistake about it. Everyone knew how skilled Dirk Nowitzki is.
Right,
there's no argument. You lay eyes on him and you can see that clearly. But to win a championship, man, you have to have an attitude. And when you've seen Dirk come in, to see him, young Dirk, the guy who was pushed around, who we all wondered if he's ever going to be strong enough to play in this league, to, like you said, being that alpha dog on the championship team. Hey, hats off to, you know, the Dallas Mavericks and their player development, and Dirk's obviously his will to want to get better, and surrounding himself with the people to accommodate that.
Last guy I want to talk about here, as far as rookies, guys who you played with while they were rookies, and this was, I believe, only one season, but it was Dwayne Wade's rookie year in Miami.
Which was interesting within itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, his rookie year was the year, the problem, which was his nickname in practice. His nickname in practice was given to him by John Wallace.
What was it?
We nicknamed him the problem.
Oh, okay.
The problem, because in practice from day one, he came in and literally destroyed everybody in practice.
Right out the gate.
Now, it was interesting because everybody was talking about LeBron and Melo and things of that nature. And this kid came in, and they played him at the point guard position in the beginning, which there was something that he had to adjust to. And, man, when they switched him up to that two-guard position, there was D-Wade was born. And he didn't look back. And I'll tell you a funny story, and this is a true story.
Okay.
I ran into D-Wade after practice, and he just bought his first car. I think it was a Chrysler 300.
Okay.
And to show you how humble this kid is,
yeah.
He comes out. You could have swore up and down it was a Bentley. I mean, he's Samaki. Man, all the guys are coming out. You know, everybody's patting him up, congratulating him on being able to buy his first vehicle.
Yeah.
And I went up to that young man, after several practices, of course, of watching him, annihilate and destroy veteran and conditioned NBA ball players with ease. I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, young man, I laughed and said, this is going to be the first of many for you.
Yeah, and it's going to get better than a Chrysler 300.
He will be a max player one day, without question.
And he always struck me as a guy who got it. You know what I mean? He understood what was being asked of him and how to execute and everything.
Well, I think his humble nature, allowed him to be, in my opinion, and I'm going out and say this: Dwayne Wade is one of the best players in NBA history, and it's hard for me not to put him up there, right. With Kobe for this particular reason. I never saw, we always give credit to players when they do well, when they score 30 points or they win a championship.
Yeah.
And in our mind, that's considered, the pinnacle of success. I have never in my NBA or my basketball career saw a guy who is a star take a back seat and become a role player and help a team win a championship. That, to me, I almost cried when I saw that, because it really taught for all the basketball purists out there that this is what basketball is all about. I've seen D-Wade, and granted, you're talking about a guy who was a star, who literally waited for the ball to be walked into his hands. He basically went to LeBron James and said, now I'm going to get out on the break. Let me do the running.
Yeah.
Let me do what the dirty players do. Let me pick up the best players and things of that nature. And that's tough. And for me, when I saw that from a superstar, a guy who's a franchise player, not just a superstar, that to me, he won a category that I have never even thought about as far as we're talking about great players.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks volumes, and way more so than, someone like Chris Bosh, who came from here to Toronto, went over there for like a bigger spotlight or whatever. I mean, Wade is having guys come onto his team and taking that back seat. I mean, just huge.
Well, the difference was he wasn't a champion yet. Bosh didn't win a championship. D. Wade was already a champion.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, so listen, I mentioned Siri a couple times. It's just an incredible experience, and obviously, given everything that's happening now, it's that much more relevant that you've kind of lived through that experience. So, I've heard you speak a little bit about it, and you mentioned, you admit that you were, and this is your word, ignorant of the country before you joined it, before you went to play there. You didn't know too much about the country or the region. What was your initial impressions, and how did those change in your experience there?
Well, I guess, to start a little bit about myself, basketball for me, from the time I was 10 years old, was taught as a platform. For me, being a basketball player was a blessing, and I was very fortunate to have experienced the highest level of professional basketball. But make no mistake about it, anything that you do in life, you want to have a platform to be able to create, and to be an artist. And for me, I was taught about world politics and things of that nature for the simple fact that in order to have a great world, you have to go outside of your element, your comfort zone, and things of that nature to embrace other people. Mm-hmm. And the minute I was had the opportunity to travel abroad, and trust me, I understand politics on an intricate level, you know, global politics, not just American politics. And for me, I take a unique interest in that because everything that happens globally ultimately affects us domestically.
Yeah.
And it alarms me that only 10% of Americans have passports, by the way, which is very dangerous if you look at it.
I think it explains a lot, too, in terms of mindsets and whatnot.
Absolutely. And so what I hope to do is use my platform to bring awareness on a global scale, hopefully, to about not just, you know, about the crises at hand, but about information and possible of being able to step out and reach across lines, mm-hmm. To be able to understand other cultures and things, because this is our world. And speaking on Syria, I have a personal experience. Obviously, have been there, visited twice in 08, back in 2010. And one of the things that happened to me is that I grew up in Syria. You know, even though I was always taught to be very conscious and aware, you know, I really understood, you know, how shallow I was as an American, not consciously, but unconsciously. And I had to understand what that was. And I had the fortunate opportunity of being able to sit with people and talk with people on very various levels and have some intriguing conversations, and how articulate these people are there, you know, how amazing they are and how compassionate they are, and, you know, taking the time to help me understand certain things with my ignorance. And one of the things I learned is, you know, you're talking about people who speak two or three languages on average.
Right, yep.
And, on average, right? And so you know this. And so here, sometimes we Americans, of course, because English has been the dominant language, we have been unfortunately fooled into thinking that, you know, we have it all. And my eyes have shown and seen the latter. Mm-hmm. And I want the American public to know, in order for us to be a great world, you have to be sort of strong as your weakest link. And I'm not talking about, and make no mistake about it, you can't take mistake highly technologized for highly civilized. And so what I want the American public to understand is that we are in dangerous times. The information that we need is not trickling back. And the beauty and platform that I have with Basketball Without Borders, and it's truly more than the NBA logo. I played in countries and where politics has limited the American reach. I've played in Syria. I've been in Iran. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to Russia. I've been to China, and I was able to use my platform to reach and talk to people and find and understand on my own, not through CNN, not through anybody's other eyes but my own, and talk about certain topics and things that I feel dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Some of these people I talked to were people who I really respect and highly respected, you know, at some of the highest levels.
Well, you know, it's crazy. You think now, I mean, there's so much discourse, for lack of a better word, on the kind of refugee situation within America. But, you know, here in Canada, I don't know if you see what's happening now. I mean, they're sending planes out and making a concerted effort to kind of bring as many refugees as possible over here now. I mean, when you see that happening, what are your thoughts, especially in concert with kind of what's happening where you're from or not happening?
I'm disappointed. Honestly, one of the reasons why I touched on this subject is because of that. There's been... you know, American propaganda is becoming to the point where it's becoming dangerous for people like myself. I love this country. I'm a citizen of this country, and I care dearly about this country. But in order to help this country, you know, you can't get caught up in, you know, propaganda, and you can't just become blinded by things that will affect us as a whole down the future, that I feel that with a little bit of awareness and understanding and compassion for change, we can annihilate any unjust, mm-hmm. you know, beforehand. And so for me, I'm passionate about taking this information and doing whatever I can to get this information out there. You know, the United States, we call ourselves a leader, in which we are in many ways. And we really need to step up in the forefront. I mean, I'm embarrassed that Canada is doing this and taking the lead in doing this. And so for myself, I'm going to do my part and hopefully team up with guys like yourself who would give me a voice and a platform to do so. I'm in the streets. I've been talking to a lot of my Syrian friends here in the United States, mm-hmm. some who even own businesses in this country, who operate as legal citizens. And I want to get their opinion. You know, I want the rest of the world to know these people are here. And don't forget, these people are forced. I guarantee you, ask the average Syrian, you know, if they had the opportunity to go back home, they'll jump in a heartbeat.
Right.
Even though it's not highly technologized over there, they'll take that, trust me. They love their country. And that's something that I want us to understand, and that we have to understand that America is a conglomerate of people who are multifaceted, whether it's from African slaves, whether it's from Jews who come from, you know, Israel, whether American is a multifaceted nation. So I don't know where this ignorance is coming from, and I'm not going to be a part of it. So I'm going to do my part to expose whatever I can.
Well, listen, it's well said. I'm glad we're able to have this conversation, that you are kind of using your experiences to talk to people and to kind of at the very least have this conversation and make people think about it. Smocky Walker, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I mentioned you're on NBC Sports Radio. Prime Basketball Player Development is your camp. Where can people find information on that?
You can go to SamakiWalker.com, you know, directly. My number and everything, it's contact information is on there. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Stay live on Twitter as well. Check me out. And it would be a pleasure to answer any questions, you know, whatsoever, you know, regarding a serious subject.
Beauty. Well, I hope people take you up on that. And thanks again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
This is Free Association. That was Dave Zarin's voice with Smocky Walker. That was good. I tell you what, I wouldn't have had the guts to go play ball. I wouldn't have done it. Are you that kind of guy?
But you know he went like before the Civil War break.
Of course, but I'm still not going over to play basketball.
That's an incredible small-minded point of view, J.D. Marcus.
I'm not going, like, I'm not leaving North America, pretty much. Like, I'm not a traveler.
That's
not
the saddest thing I ever heard. You gotta
I'm
get
not
around.
A traveler. I'm not one that really wants to. Like, I hear about these stories of people, like, my mom went to China recently, and I can't remember how many hours she spent on the plane, but I was like,
that would be torturous. You know, it's been a while since I've heard a J.D.'s mom's story.
Yeah.
Bust it out.
That's all. She just She's a traveler. My mom loves travel, okay. And she went to China and she was telling me about the flight, and I'm just like, no, you'd have to sedate me. You can't get me to fly. You have to sedate me. If I'm going more than like 5 hours.
I only fly sedated.
You're like the Ramones video where he's just in the chair and they're wheeling him around. Yeah. I want to be sedated video. That just dated me pretty hard, eh?
No, people know who the Ramones are, I think.
No.
I hope. Did you know Hungry Heart by Bruce Springsteen was written for the Ramones?
No. But I don't really know much about the Ramones other than Joey Ramone was a guy, and I once saw one of the Ramones at a concert.
Okay, so listen, Smocky Walker, first of all, the draft day suit thing blew me away. The fact that that white hat was like beckoning at him in a store window on the way to the draft.
You've never had that though? You see something in a shop and you're just like, I must have this.
I've never been wearing
it. And then it doesn't look great on you.
I've never been wearing an all white suit and then seen a white fedora like screaming at me in a window and thought, this will complete my outfit.
See, I actually did buy a fedora once and I wore it like out of the shop being like, this is me now. Right. I'm a fedora guy.
This is me. I'm now instantly 45 years older.
And it's safe to say I never rocked a fedora again.
Yeah, but you're going to wear
it's a terrible look.
You're going to wear it when we tape our next episode. Please.
Maybe.
A couple super quick things to end on here. You've heard about Iman Shumpert.
Of course.
Delivering his own baby. Thanks
to someone said to me when I told them that story, they were like not impressed. They were like, that happens all the time.
Well,
I'm like,
it does.
Where are you from?
It does happen all the time.
But like that's incredible.
People on the side of the road or whatever. It is incredible. Good
I don't know.
Him.
It's still pretty impressive.
I don't have anything to add. I just want to say it's
the
is
Sixers
impressive.
Continue to suck. Now they add Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm done with the Sixers. I'm done talking about Philly.
I just think it's funny that now they're just adding all these guys, all these names. They're just like, hey, this is going to, Sixers fans, stay tuned. We got D'Antoni and Colangelo.
Yeah. So
like, what are they going to do next?
Steve Nash, Sean Marion. We're bringing the band back together.
That would be amazing. Amari Stoudemire, yes, he's the guy next year.
Yeah, but talk to, at the draft lottery is the next time I want to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers.
Or the next time Okafor knocks somebody out.
Exactly. Hey, so listen, holiday wish list. The holidays are upon us. You got anything?
I do. I got one holiday wish, and that's
as it
Raptors.
Pertains to the Raptors and the NBA.
And that's the inconsistencies and the slow starts. And you know, you thought that the Raptors had really turned a corner with that Warriors game.
I really did, and they did for a little bit,
for like a game.
Yeah, I was right for the next game.
Yeah, for the next game, you were right. But
that's the thing with this team is, yeah, you can't. They're immune to blanket statements because then they go out and do the opposite immediately after.
I want to see more consistency. I don't think you should be losing home games to the Suns, to the Kings. I don't think you should have to have your starters on the floor playing 36 minutes against the Sixers. But it all stems from the first quarter scoring. And again, I'm so tired of hearing, well, the group didn't come out with the type of intensity that we needed, or, you know, those halftime interviews where it's just there and it's, you know, you're hearing the same type of jargon every time from like Kalamian or whatever, where it's just like, yeah, we didn't have the type of effort we needed from the start.
How do you fix it?
I have no clue. Like I said, the group is good. The starters have been proven to be fine. I think getting JV back hopefully helps it out again. But again, they're third last in scoring in the first quarter. They're bottom 10 in opponent field goal percentage. Like, these are totally unacceptable teams for a group that we're debating at the top of the show about trying to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals as a realistic goal.
I never said that was going to happen.
I never said it was going to happen. I said that that should definitely be a goal of this team this season with the way that the East is.
Right.
There shouldn't be a single team other than the Cavs that they look at and says, this group can 100%, we cannot beat them in a 7-game series. Not as of right now, not the way that they're composed. So yeah, that's it for me, is that my holiday wish list is to play more consistently and come out with better intensity, as the coaching staff continues to put it. I'm tired of it. I really am. They're too talented of a group to be that bad. They shouldn't be with the Sixers in any category, and they are when it comes to first quarter scoring.
It's a major problem. It has to get fixed, and you know, I don't see what just changes overnight. You know, I'm not sure how you go about that. You know, when Casey gets interviewed about it, he puts it all back on the players.
Sense of urgency, intensity, that is the same.
Yeah, he always says, like, you know, one day they're going to have to get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that was probably a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's probably a while back. You got anything you'd put on the wish list?
Yeah, just consistent, a little more consistent effort.
So we're both wishing for the same thing?
Yeah, I think every Raptors follower is, everyone who watches this team.
Some are wishing for bench scores. Isn't it funny that I mentioned the Kevin Martin trade machine thing, and then like a day later it was like, bang, Kevin Martin's on the block.
Yeah, we talked about
and
that
every
last
Raptors
week.
Fan is just like, hey, look at this.
But it's yeah, you broke that rumor, JD.
I'm the rumor breaker.
All right.
I got no credit from anybody.
Okay, listen, I'm fading fast here, so let's just
wrap it up. Yeah,
you're
sinking in the chair. Let's go.
This has been cool. JD, what's going on, Brady and Walker, this week?
He had Bismack Biyombo today. He had some really cool stuff to say. He talked about Rajon Rondo, actually, and about the reception he got and about fans having to move on and how Rondo has to wear it. He also talked the same thing about the Raptors' slow starts and how he gets frustrated defensively when the guys come out like that. So it's a cool interview, actually. I highly recommend it. He's actually like a really thoughtful guy. Very good interview.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I interviewed him after his first game, and first of all, he's like the biggest like night and day on court, off court in terms of his personality. But yeah, he's a good interview and a thoughtful dude as well. So you can check that out on sportsnet.ca, that Brady Walker interview. We have the video of it on there right now. For sportsnet.ca, like I mentioned, X is going to be a really cool one. We got a lot of good stuff going this
week.
Yeah,
and check out Grange's piece on Kyle Lowry, because I thought that was the best thing on sportsnet.ca today. It was very, very good stuff.
There you go. Yeah, check that out. Also, Sportsnet Magazine.
You look like you're slowly slipping out of the chair, like your body is like melting from the waist down.
I've got like 15 seconds before I fall on the floor.
So you can just call it.
No, here we go. Sportsnet Magazine, awards issues out right now. It's got a bunch of cool basketball content in there. Plus, the first issue of the year, I can't say what it is, but we've got something killer, killer, All-Star related, Raptors related, a very cool story. So keep your eyes out for that. This has been fun. Thanks, JD.
You're welcome.
You can follow JD at JD Bunkus. You can hit me up at Dave Zarum. Again, always. Sorry, quick interruptions. This here, we're watching NBA TVs on the background. This is DeRozan's cousin, Deshaun, and he's kind of in his group. And when DeRozan first moved here, he was the guy who was living with him and whatnot, helping facilitate him. And he's a big part of DeRozan's kind of success as well. Kind of keeps him accountable.
That's amazing. Cut this all.
I got distracted. It's right in front of my face.
And thank you for listening to Free Association, where Dave Zarum tries to describe things that are on the television set.
All right, now there's some fans are pointing. I'm not sure at what because it's off camera. Oh, that's DeRozan's dad. Anyways, you're listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
Happy holidays.
We wish you the merriest, the merriest.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.